Welcome to the Spirituality of Strength Training with your host, Anna Willard. This podcast is dedicated to bring you knowledge, wisdom, inspiration, and guidance to wherever you may be on your health journey. For those who are new to me, I am a kettlebell strength coach, a movement nerd ninja, and an empowerment coach on a mission to bring you hope through our health. The root word of health comes from wholeness. The root word of wholeness comes from holy. Despite our differences with religion and spiritual beliefs, we are all human beings with a body that is designed to reflect this holiness through our health. It wasn't until my 7th year as a health profession where I went into a deep awakening of understanding what does it mean to train my spirit and to heal my spirit through the physical. You'll hear a little bit more about my story from other health professionals, from strength coaches, psychiatrists, spiritual gurus and leaders, to other people who talk about the importance of our health as a community body and the health of our planet as well. This podcast is to allow us to step into our whole health, mentally, physically, emotionally, and spiritually. Thank you for being here. If you love what you hear, I encourage you to subscribe. If you want more inspiration and quotes from these podcasts, I encourage you to follow me on Instagram at @Anna_Willard_. I encourage you to do a little bit of a movement, either a yoga flow, go for a walk, sit in nature, as you enjoy this episode. Strong ones, thank you so much for being here. We have Dr. Angela Parker with us. She is the assistant biblical studies professor here at the Seattle School of Theology and Psychology. And most of you know and who have listened into some of the other episodes I have, I refer to this school when I've dropped out.
Gotcha.
So this is it. This is the place.
Yeah.
This is the place. So Dr. Angela, thank you so much for just taking time out of your day. I know you have a very busy schedule.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for meeting me here at this school.
Oh, it made a good excuse to get downtown.
So. I'm glad.
Yeah. This is the question that I have been dying to ask you. Mm-hmm. What is the significance of the fact of Jesus Christ came at a time where walking barefoot was such a critical point for transportation and communication?
Yeah. Oh, that's a great question. And that's a very contextual question. And oftentimes people don't want to think contextually about Jesus's body and the bodies of the crowds that followed him when he was walking around and what that meant for his own physical well-being. Mm-hmm. I think that just the question opens up the idea that Jesus was an incarnate person at a specific time that suffered and went through and experienced significant daily issues of life that I imagine had to come out within his body, had to come out from his feet, had to come out in either the strength or the tiredness of his legs, that the dryness of the area as well. And what the dryness would have meant to, especially people who did not have a lot of flowing water around. And so you're therefore probably having or mixing a little bit of water with wine in order to get some hydration.
Right.
And then what does that, so all the question that you just started makes me think of what does his feet experience and what his whole body as a result experience as a result of living in that particular context. And then what his hydration may have entailed, especially with the mixing of water and wine. And then the arduousness of the journeys from place to place and town to town. Mm-hmm. I think that gives us a better idea of the humanity of Jesus. And I often say to students that if Jesus did not experience full humanity, mm-hmm. then how can he save us? Mm. And so I think that particular experience of full humanity in a dry Mediterranean context mm-hmm. actually shows that Jesus was not a suburban Jesus, mm. a comfortable Jesus, mm. maybe not even necessarily a yoga wearing pant Jesus.
I love it that you just said that.
Well, true.
Yeah. With that, within the fitness industry, mm-hmm. there's been a lot of movement towards barefoot.
Ah.
And so that's where the correlation and the question stems mm-hmm. from mm-hmm. is because I think one of the main reasons why I love kettlebells so much is that we train barefoot.
Oh, that's good.
Mm-hmm. So I guess my question goes into, did you also come at that time of leading as an example of how we should heal our body in the physical?
I think he's leading in the example of how to heal the body in the physical, but also how we should heal one another in the physical. Mm. We shouldn't require that people wear uncomfortable shoes. Mm-hmm. We shouldn't require, for some reason, I'm going to the airline industry that says you have to wear a certain type of makeup or something. Mm. So I think it's the idea of how we treat one another as well, because mm. I'm reminded of biblical text in the Gospel of Luke where Jesus reprimands somebody for not offering water or to wipe their feet, mm-hmm. Wipe his feet after he's come into the house. Mm-hmm. But somebody else has come in, a woman has come in and washed his feet. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's the care for others mm-hmm. that the fitness industry has to be very aware of, mm-hmm. that you mm-hmm. can't require necessarily that everyone has the same type of shoe or the same
right.
type of outfit, but you have to offer the opportunity mm-hmm. for people to be able to train barefoot. And it's fascinating because I probably only do it about 15 minutes in a week. Mm. Every other time I'm training, I'm have on my sneakers.
Right.
But usually one night a week, I'll do something for 15 minutes barefoot.
Nice.
And so now, but you're reminding me that I probably need to do that. I'm like, I only do 15 minutes. That's not enough.
Well, it's funny that you say that because now, but there's a time and a place for mm-hmm. shoes because I started running again. Mm-hmm. There's no way I could run the white or the amount that I want to run with just barefoot. Like I would destroy my feet. Mm-hmm. So there's a time and a place for it.
Mm-hmm. I used to live in New York. And so I would go to Central Park every Sunday.
Yeah.
And that was after a morning of church and then going to Central Park and being in the, like in nature and in the park. And I would constantly see runners with the barefoot shoes running. Mm-hmm. And I would just be like, oh, that just looks like it hurts.
And that's, I think, the beauty of like the human body is like you can train it to mm-hmm. adapt to that. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of like what direction you want to take it.
Well, the other piece is when I went from New Jersey to North Carolina and I have two children who were 6 and 4, I think, around that time. And I remember we pulled up into North Carolina after driving from New Jersey. Mm-hmm. And I see my children's cousins, who were soon to be playmates, running around outside barefoot mm-hmm. in the North Carolina rocky.
Yeah.
Soil.
Yeah.
And I just remember thinking, that can't be good, but they were used to it.
Yeah.
And so that's the other thing. Your body does train to know certain terrain and to do certain things.
Yeah. It's funny that you bring that up because I remember when I was young and being barefoot playing outside mm-hmm. and the sun had set. It was like one of those late summer nights.
Yeah.
Just all the neighborhood kids were at my place mm-hmm. or at my house. And I remember the sensation of the dew setting on the grass and just playing and just like all of a sudden noticing the environment changing. Mm-hmm. So I say that and then I'm going to change a little bit and mm-hmm. then ask a question. So I've been doing a lot of taking a lot of dance healing classes.
Oh, lovely.
And one of the healers or the leader who has been leading the classes, she talked about as we started warming up, but just like mm-hmm. just imagine your foot being an ear to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
So with that story that I just shared, what's the significance of being connected to our own being and also connected to nature?
Yeah. I think that, well, let me just say this. I think in Christian tradition, we lose the connection to nature. Mm. I think in Christian tradition, we've become dominant of nature and of earth.
Mm-hmm.
And we think that being a steward is being dominant. Mm-hmm. And so we don't necessarily do well with listening to nature. So I would argue that, and see, this is what I do, a return to thinking deeply and more nuancedly about the biblical text helps me see that I need to have an ear to nature. I need to have an ear to when the earth is crying. And earth, Gaia, is feminine in both the context of our biblical text and the context of even the Roman Empire. Gaia was always a woman who is supposedly offering up her bounty to us. Now, we know that you can't offer up bounty if you are oppressed. You can't offer up bounty if no one listens to you. So it's very logical for me to make the connection in my mind to an oppressed earth not being able to offer up bounty. And if we continue on not listening to the earth, we're doing a disservice to her and not taking care of her the way we should be. And what was the original question?
I love what you're saying. I think my original question was talking about what you were just saying about being able to listen.
Okay.
Because I used the analogy of what my dance healer said of your foot.
Yes, yes.
Being an ear to the ground.
Right.
And I think of more the indigenous people of how they could feel and hear like buffalo herds. And they understood the vibration of the ground. I love being up at Edmonds, and a lot of times you can feel the train coming.
Yes.
From distance away just because of that vibration. So I guess I just say that as an example of what it means to listen to the earth and the vibration pulse that it gives us. I think you did, you answered the question of the importance of listening.
All right, good. That helped. I just started talking.
No, that's great. Yeah, I love what you have to say. And it goes into the next question because you brought a lot up about water.
Yes.
And my question is that where the Holy Spirit lives, is within water?
I think the Holy Spirit lives in water, air, earth, everything. If we had to think about the elements, earth, wind, fire, I think Holy Spirit's in all of that. And so I think that makes it tangible. Well, I wouldn't say it. I would say her as well.
Yeah.
It makes her tangible and alive and moving in many different iterations through people. So you have to think that, especially in biblical texts, people, Jesus, Paul, even John talks about how spirit is fire, or spirit is water, or spirit is the wind. And so I just think that within all of the elements, there's an elemental spirit, which an elemental spirit is not a bad thing. It's just, it's a spirit that's within the matter that we carry within us and we exchange within us. I often ask people, how well are you able to read a room? How well are you able to read the air in a room? And I think often that's part of spirit's work. Spirit's work says, are you reading what's going on around here? Do you feel what's happening even when people aren't saying anything? I think that's spirit.
Well, and I think that goes right into my next question, because I've had a lot of conversations with my friends in the fitness world, of just like, there's a universal language of movement. Like, I know I could read someone with how they walk their dog, even just with the fact of like what type of leash they have. And it doesn't matter what type of activity it is. It's just understanding how to read the movement. And so I guess my question comes into, is that more of, and you may be familiar with this term, of a Christ conscious. So like you're understanding his language that we have negated by speaking.
That's fascinating. I don't know if I would call it a Christ conscious, though. I've never heard of that term. And I would probably still term it a spirit conscious. Because there's a language that's spoken without, of course, it's speaking, as we just said. And so you look and you read with your eyes, or you read with what you feel within your gut, or you read with what you feel when you're your fingers tingle, mm-hmm. you read. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's the elemental spirit that mm-hmm. I would say. So I wouldn't necessarily say that it has to be a Christ conscious.
Okay.
I think we limit our language too much mm. when we say it's just a Christ conscious.
Okay.
Because I think it also happens for those who would not use the language of Christ conscious. And yeah. I can't believe I just said that here in the Seattle psychology. But that's what I believe. I really
yeah,
do.
Yeah, yeah. No,
because
that's great.
I can't negate the spirit conscious that I experience with people who may not say it's a Christ conscious.
Right.
And yeah, I think that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you for saying that.
Oh, no problem.
Yeah. My next question goes into water. Mm-hmm. As I've continued my journey of healing, one of the things that I have rediscovered is my passion for whales.
Mm. And oh, lovely.
It made me just be aware of like all the garbage and debris that yeah. we are putting into the ocean. Mm-hmm. And I guess my question is, kind of going back to what you were saying about Mother Earth.
Yeah.
And are we healing her or mm-hmm. are we destroying her? Is that more of a fact of a power over, and we have put money at a higher priority than just nature?
I would definitely say that. I often talk about power over as opposed to power with.
Yeah.
And so I'm constantly trying to impress upon students that you are living wrong if you think you have power over anything.
Right.
And actually, if you think you have power over something, it's actually a false power. Mm. And so there has to be a way that we have to reimagine our power as power with. Who is it? Forrest Ensley often says we have to have co-powerment, which is the same thing for me as power with.
Right.
That we have to find ways that are not just capitalistic or money hungry,
right.
but to say, no, there's something that needs to happen that we listen to Mother Earth, that mm-hmm. we take care of her so that she doesn't actually eject us later on.
Right.
Well, that's the reality.
Yeah.
And that's why I get frustrated when I hear various conversations that can't even imagine Mother Earth ejecting us, because
she'll get upset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So I think that's the idea of the consistent power over mm-hmm. that the false sense of power over says that Mother Earth will not eject. Mm-hmm. And that's a false sense of power. Mm-hmm. And so there will be a time where there's nothing that can be done. And mm-hmm. to realize that your military is preparing for cataclysmic events because the earth is saying that something is going to happen, mm-hmm. but you have other levels of policymakers who will ignore that. That's a false sense of power over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Do you think it's stems from the fact that we don't even understand the depth of the power of the Holy Spirit within mm-hmm. nature? And we are intimidated by it, and so therefore we try to control it.
Well, let's think about this. We've already talked about spirit is feminine, mm-hmm. talked about earth is feminine, mm-hmm. talking about even thinking about the moons and the waves
yeah.
and all of that feminine energy. And we've talked about power, and we can begin to vocalize who are the folks who have the most power. And what happens when the folks who have the most power recognize that there's a lot of feminine energy that's very powerful. Mm-hmm. And so instead of allowing the feminine energy to rule, mm-hmm. you'd rather have power over feminine energy. Mm-hmm. It's very masculine, feminine, mm-hmm. dualistic ideas that
right.
that are occurring in a lot of these conversations without people realizing it. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's part of the idea that we live in modernity, even though sometimes we think we live in post-modernity, because yeah. modernity would still consider that dualism of male-female and say they're one's higher, one's lower, mm-hmm. whereas post-modernity would say, no, there has to be some way to be more equal. Mm-hmm. And I think we're still in a modern phase where we haven't thought about how to be more equal, and even equal with Mother Earth. And Mother Moon.
Yeah.
And recognizing that the moon affects the waves, and then mm-hmm. you know, women get together and we sync up and
oh,
those
yeah,
things.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
That's unfathomable to those who don't go through that.
Right.
So that there's an energy, there's a spirit that actually moves within all of this creation that we haven't even really begun to understand. Mm-hmm. And so because we don't begin to understand it, we get into this language of, well, I have to have power over it. Mm-hmm. I don't understand it, but I'm still going to do my best to control it.
So does that work like community comes into play of just like, I don't understand this, but I'm going to be led by this?
Fascinating. I think possibly. However, communities are so separate that you have one community that can begin to have a conversation that says, how do we work with and be with all of creation? Mm-hmm. But then you have other communities who are like, forget that. I need to take care of my community. And so I think you have this idea potentially of warring communities, even as we think about what community could be. Because communities have different values. And so one community may value something, whereas another community would value something very different. And so warring communities means the community that actually has more power can make a horrible decision for other people or lesser communities. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Good question.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
Now you stumped me. Now I'm like, God, now I have to think of another question. I want to talk a little bit more about the crucifixion and the importance of Lent. I know from my own journey, a lot of times there's something that I know I can feel like the swell within me during February and March. And I usually tease of like, I could just delete February out of the year. Like, I just don't like that month. But I think it's just because there's something always internally that I have to shed.
Wow.
So I guess my question is, what's the significance of Lent and why do some religions still practice that? I don't know if you know this. One of my friends talked to me about how a caterpillar continues to shed. It doesn't shed once. Yeah. It has layers and layers and layers before it even enters into the process of making its cocoon.
Right.
So I guess my thought process is like, how much shedding do we have to do as human beings to really be who we know we can be?
That's a very great question. I will answer by invoking the words of a very good friend of mine, the Reverend Dr. Kelly Brown. Reverend Dr. Kelly Brown pastors Plymouth UCC up on 6.
Okay.
And she did she said something recently on a Facebook post that said, I'm a Black woman. I don't do Lent. I do Lent all the time, every part of the year. An example, walking here to the Seattle School of Theology and Psychology has been a minefield all the time for me. As soon as I get off the bus, or even just walking out of my house and getting on the bus and then getting on the bus and then getting off the bus and then walking from the bus to here is always, anything could happen in the course of a morning. So in this particular morning today, I'm walking from the bus to here to meet with lovely people such as yourself. And I'm walking and there's a gentleman with a American flag hat on. And he's sitting on a rock on the corner. And as I'm walking down, he locks eyes with me and he's beginning to scowl as he's locking eyes with me. And my first response is, and he scowls even more. And I'm like, okay, it's going to be one of those days. And so as I just keep walking past and trying to hurry past so I don't have to endure anything else, I'm beginning to shed that experience as I'm still walking to school. And so when you talk to me about Lent, I often think about Lent as the thing that denominations who don't have a high majority of oppressed people do in order to make themselves feel better. So I constantly have to shed skin and shed experiences and push through and come and do the work that I have to do and still be relatively cognizant and cogent and clear as to what I'm saying and doing in the midst of those kinds of instances that happen more often than not,
yeah,
especially after 2016.
Yeah. Well, and I just thank you for sharing that, because I don't think we realize, I didn't realize that this is still an issue
right
in our nation.
And
I don't know if it's just because I grew up more in the suburban white farmlands. That wasn't, I wasn't accustomed to that until being here at the school and just listening to other people of color and realizing that this is still an issue for you guys of how we unfortunately treat you guys. So it makes, even when you're saying that, makes me realize they have to do so much more work than we do. And I just honor and respect your strength for that, because I think it goes into this aspect of letting go and not holding on. And letting go is like the most challenging concept of life.
Well, I think I said in the context of a class one day, I'm too cute to die. So I have to let a lot of stuff go, because if I hold on to it, it'll eat me up. I just can't.
Yeah. So going back to Lent, do you think religions still hold on to that just to make them and their community feel better about themselves?
Well, I don't want to be facetious and claim that, but I do want to recognize that there are particular denominations who love a liturgical calendar and heed to a liturgical calendar, because we do, as humanity, we like ritual in some things.
Yeah.
And so I want to respect that, but I also have a strong sense of sometimes the extemporaneous just needs to be extemporaneous, and you need to kind of live in that as well. And
can you expand on that?
So I'm thinking of how we can not be so rigid.
You
have to, well, especially even if you're, I just went back to I actually used to teach step aerobics.
Yeah.
And when you can see that a class is not getting a step, you kind of take something out of your rotation in your head and then use another 16 block of choreography in order to make the class get the step. So that's what I'm talking about extemporaneously, to be able to think on the spot and change something really quickly.
Got it.
And not have to be on this particular set schedule, because you never know what's going to happen in the midst of when you get into something.
Yeah.
So you have 10 new students who don't know a basic step from a B step.
Right.
And so you have to break it down, but still keep the advanced class at a high heart rate. So, you know, you have to be able to do that some days. Wow.
Well, my mind goes to the importance of the fact of like how strong you have to be, but you only can be so strong without a certain range of motion. You have to be open to other things to be able to really step into that strength. So I find there's an incredible balance between that two.
Yes.
Versus just like constantly strength training. There has to be that yin and yang aspect. Not just in the physical aspect, but just in everyday life too.
Exactly. I would definitely agree with that.
Good. Going back to the Lent and aspect, with the crucifixion of Jesus, what's the significance of three with him dying and then rising on the third day?
Yeah. I think that the Gospel of Mark really hones in on the significance of three, the significance of telling stories in triplicate. So it's fascinating that in between Mark chapter 8 through Mark chapter 10, you get three. Jesus predicts he's about to die. The disciples misunderstand and respond with no.
Right.
And then Jesus gives them a teaching that says something like, the first will have to be last and the last will be first, or something like that.
Yeah.
And so that happens three times in that 8 through 10 passage. And then after the crucifixion, after 3 days, Jesus is, well, in the Gospel of Mark, he's out of the grave, but the people are still afraid. And so I think in the Matthew and the Luke narrative, you expand more on three, or that those 3 days and then the resurrection appearances. And then I'm going to go to the Gospel of John that gives us 3 years of ministry for Jesus. Mm-hmm. I think that for Christian tradition, mm-hmm. and for the development of the crucifixion passion narrative, that three can represent some kind of triune or Trinitarian mm-hmm. ideal.
Yeah.
I think that just the element of Father, Son, Spirit mm-hmm. could be at play in this Trinitarian mm. ideal that we're seeing all throughout the biblical text. Yeah, that's what I would say. Okay. That is probably pointing to a Trinitarian idea. Mm-hmm. I'm always reticent of saying it is a Trinitarian idea.
Yeah.
I think it points to a Trinitarian idea.
Yeah.
I think that when we read text, we see further than what the text says because we read a text and then we construct a theology. And I would say read a text and read a text again and read a text again and really think, is this the theology that we are constructing? Mm. That's what I would say.
Okay.
I say it points to three. I think it points to Trinitarian ideals.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I guess my next question is, like, how does that intertwine with everyday life for us as humans here?
Oh, that's fascinating. How does that intertwine with everyday life as humans for us here? I think if I have to think and use the language of a theological anthropology, okay. mm-hmm. I would say that historically, and even in Greco-Roman philosophical thought, mm-hmm. humanity is thought up or thought with this triplicate idea, this idea of a body, mm-hmm. this idea of a soul, a psuche, and then this element of some kind of breathe, spirit, some kind of, and it's fascinating because in Hebrew language, it's the nefesh, it's the neck. Because the neck is where it's like,
fascinating.
Yeah. And so it's this idea of that your neck holds your breath, your, and your gut kind of holds your bowels, and then you have this body, something. Uh-huh. And so I think that for early thinkers, both Christian and philosophical, they're trying to give a language of this triplicate of humanity. Uh-huh. The problem is spirit, nefesh, become prioritized over body.
Can you elaborate on that?
That everything that matters is spiritual. Uh-huh. Body should not matter as much.
Yeah.
That the body is going to die, but what's going to be saved is the spirit. Mm. And that can be damaging for actual bodies. Mm-hmm. Because what happens is, it's okay that the earth is oppressed. Mm-hmm. It's okay that you die. It's okay that you're poor. It's okay that you're, you know.
It's almost like a handicap.
Yeah. Because in the end, your spirit will be saved.
Yeah.
And that's where it becomes problematic because uh-huh. we haven't thought about the intertwining of body, soul, spirit mm-hmm. that really thinks of them as intertwined. Mm-hmm. So I think that's where Trinitarian ideas actually get into humanity. Mm-hmm. And theological anthropology thinks about it, but still struggles with, how do we work all of this into what's good, fair, and just for actual bodies today, mm-hmm. and not just what's good, fair, and just for spirits that die later on? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
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 Fascinating.
It is, isn't it? That's why we do this.
I know. I love it. My next question goes back to water and the importance of baptism. Going back into like the aspect of body. I know just from my own walk, my faith walk, I guess I would call it now. I wanted to be baptized at a young age, but I didn't feel comfortable doing it in the church building just because it was in pool and it was like in the ground and it just didn't feel as natural.
Right.
It wasn't until I went to like a church camp. I was like, okay, I think this is the time I need to be baptized. And I remember before I was dunked, and for those listeners who aren't familiar with being baptized, it's a significance of, I guess, surrenderance of declaring your life for God and being renewed within the water. And so when I was baptized, I remember just like tears are streaming from my face. I'm standing waist deep in this lake. And just saying, I just think it's so incredible that God can use me through my body.
Yes.
And then being baptized. And for those who've been kind of following me on social media this year, I'm 33. And I was like, I'm going to baptize myself every day that I'm 33. And I didn't last. I know. I have a story with this and then we can go into the question. When I first started, and there's been times in my life where I'm like, I just need to baptize myself. And I think this goes back to my time with water skiing, where some of the professional skiers, and even just my friends who weren't professionals, we teased of how like water skiing is like a baptism. Because you go in,
you go in and you go under.
and then you're like this, you feel like a completely different person after you've skied.
Oh, lovely.
So there's been times in my life where I'm like, I just need to be in water. Like, there's nothing that can help me right now except the aspect of feeling being held in water. So going back to why I wanted to do a baptism every day of me being 33, when it's like the, my Christ year. And so the first day I did it, I dunked myself under three times. And every day that week I went back out, but it was typical Seattle weather, rain, overcast. So I just made sure I had a beanie on so I wasn't going to get sick. And then a week, it was a full week, and it was a beautiful blue sky day. Sat at the lake, or at the, I was at Richmond Beach, and just took my time, went into the water, and I was just like, I think I need to dunk myself three times. Went back, started journaling. I was like, I think that's all I need, is just to do it this week.
I see.
And so I guess it goes back to like what you were saying about the flexibility. Of just like not trying to force it. I tried to force it a little bit because I'm like, this is what I told everyone, I got to do this. But this is like, no, this is what I need to do for my body. So I guess my question goes to the aspect, what's the importance and the significance of being underwater?
Yeah, that's a great question. That is fascinating to me because in Baptist tradition, you get one baptism. And that's it. And it's fascinating because in a tradition, in my particular tradition, I did not hear about the Christ year. I did not hear about the Christ year until I came to this school. And so when a lot of folks are hitting that 33 age, they're talking about their Christ year. And I was like, really? That's a thing? Because I remember thinking at 33, I had kids. I was just never... crossed my mind.
Can we explain what that is for the listeners real quick? So, I just put myself on the spot. Dang! Snap. So 33 is the year that Jesus Christ was crucified. And so there's just, I think there's a significance, and I guess that's why I also asked what the significance of three.
I gotcha. So, but the baptism, the significance of going underwater, especially when we look at it in the biblical text, it's the idea of the washing away and the washing anew. And so I love the idea. And so if I had to buck against my own Baptist tradition, I'd say it seems like a lovely idea to have the continuous washing away, the continuous washing anew, because you know, we go through life and sometimes you just need to reset, so to speak. And so I'm wondering, for me and my own Black Baptist tradition, is that a disservice for us that we don't allow a continued repetitive baptism?
Yeah.
But it's that significance of washing anew.
Right.
Which, as I'm sitting here thinking about it and just thinking about, you know, John the Baptist out there in the Jordan River baptizing people and they're washing anew and confessing sins and just being relieved.
Right.
That seems lovely.
Uh-huh.
And the command to only do it one time seems harsh.
Mm.
Now, if anyone's listening who wants to revoke an ordination, don't do it. Don't try me.
And I guess it goes back to this, like, just even when Jesus was here on earth, how he would wash the feet.
And how
that would, even in itself, is a form of baptism.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm also thinking about the woman anointing Jesus's head and then another gospel, his feet, with oil.
Yeah.
There's this constant anointing or washing or renewal message.
Right.
That it's not necessarily a one and done.
Right.
It's something that we have to revisit, which is why I want to remind our listeners and watchers about ritual. That ritual is important.
Mm-hmm.
And so the Lenten season is important for large groups of people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand that the ritual nature of even thinking about baptism again, that says, you know, I've collected a lot of stuff on me and I need to get it off.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a very human thing too.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the significance of getting stuff off.
Yeah.
Is a renewal experience,
yeah,
which is lovely.
For those who may not understand that they may be carrying like collective stuff, what are some tips that you can give people to kind of help understand of like they're carrying like maybe that conversation or they're carrying with that gentleman, that story that you shared earlier? What are some steps that you have given yourself and then you can help with others with that process?
Yeah. So I think I've mentioned this to you before. The one most important thing for me is my punching bag.
Yes,
so
yes.
I have a punching bag at home. And when things happen and at the end of the day, I need to picture faces and punch my bag, that literally gets it out of my body.
Yeah,
that's what I have to do often just to get things out of my body. That's my ritual for me in an evening to say, get out of me. And I just think for me, I'm not necessarily one to go into the water, but being around running water and walking around water is calming for me.
Yeah.
And the other piece that I've found fascinating, especially being in Seattle, were the looking at the many shades of gray, that there, the sky oftentimes has 50 shades of gray and they're beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was at Green Lake and it was a gray day and I just stopped and just looked because it was absolutely glorious, the gray. Mm-hmm. And I was stunned that I was happy to see the gray and to notice the varieties of gray.
Yeah.
And I think that's part of listening to earth.
Uh-huh.
Part of, well, a womanist principle is God gets pissed off when we don't notice the purple flowers in the field. Mm. And so womanist identity says, all right, yeah, we have husbands or wives or children. We have this, we have that. But we also have this earth that we are supposed to love and see and appreciate.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's part of how we're supposed to, I think, renew as well.
Mm.
The idea that we can look and see something of beauty that actually feeds our soul. That's that's why we have art museums around.
Yeah.
And to appreciate that. So that's a human quality, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. My question goes to more of the church.
Mm-hmm.
There was a time I water skied down in North Carolina
I
considered that like my home for skiing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I used to work in the kitchen with an African-American woman.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in a place of like, I want to go to church because we didn't work on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
And she went to church. I was like, oh, great. I'll just go to church with you.
Right.
I had no idea what I was getting myself into, but it was so much fun.
Yes.
And At first it was a little alarming, but then I was like, this is how they do it. This is how they do it. Mm-hmm. And there is a lot of women who would just literally break out and dance. Mm-hmm. And every other woman was like fanning her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And just saying she's being filled with the spirit right mm-hmm. now. I was like, okay, what's this mean? Mm-hmm. And then it was interesting. My roommate at the time, she was from Australia and she wanted to experience this. Mm-hmm. And she had just was like, what is going on? Right. Like, you just have to embrace it.
Yeah.
You just have to embrace it. Do you have anything like, I thought it was fascinating for women to move and be known, like the Holy Spirit's moving in her.
Mm-hmm. So you're talking to a Black Baptist.
I know.
I think I've told the faculty this one time, this story, that I knew that I was comfortable in a place when the spirit moved me to the point where I leapt and danced in spirit. And I should say this too, that the spirit of God was going to move me out of a place as well.
Yeah.
When a time was over.
Uh-huh.
And I leapt and danced in the spirit because I had been released from a particular place.
It's fascinating.
And that the spirit of God moves. And I think this is probably why I'm fascinated with affect theory. Affect theory is basically how emotions leap from person to person.
Ah, yeah.
And so I often think about spirit also leaping from person to person.
Oh, fascinating.
So the idea that you're about to or are on the cusp of a breakthrough
mm-hmm.
and the spirit moves within you to such a point that says, I'm not at that breakthrough yet, but I am almost there.
Mm.
And I've heard the word of the Lord that says, I'm almost there.
Mm-hmm.
After you've been through something or doing something or working on something for such a long period of time,
mm-hmm.
and that spirit says, you're there, just one more day or one more step.
Mm.
That's a song. I think it's Byron Cage. Yeah. One more day, one more step. I don't sing, but that's the thing, that you're almost there. And it's like when the word of the Lord drops into your spirit and lets you know that, there's nothing that can stop that movement of you in the spirit mm-hmm. at that particular moment.
Mm-hmm.
So it happens. And there's a comedian by the name of White Mike who says, he's a white guy and went to a Black church and he saw the spirit moving and he's like, and it went here, and it got to me and said, oh, he's white, and left out, and I was mad.
That's too good.
But I will say this, and I think it's when you read African-American slave religion and you read that enslaved folks would go to church and listen to a hired preacher of the plantation owner that usually preached, slaves obey your masters.
Right.
And then after that church was over, they would go out into the woods and get in a ring and beat the drum and have real church out in the woods, knowing that they just did the performance for the plantation owner because the plantation owner wants them to be saved so they can be pliable, compliable slaves. But out there in the dark, in the marsh by themselves, that's when the element of spiritual dancing and dancing in spirit became a part of us.
Okay.
So that when you go to Black church, it's still there.
So my mind goes to what you said earlier of like being power with.
Mm-hmm.
Is that concept of what you just described, living and breathing that empowerment with each other versus power over?
Yeah, I would say so, because in those circles and in those meetings, that was also when plans were made that if we were going to escape, we would make that plan there as well, because you're not under the eye of the power over you.
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
Fascinating.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, cool. My other question that I've been wanting to ask you is, I think you talk about this in your classes, and unfortunately, I think you're getting to it when I dropped out. So this is my time to kind of make up time a little bit. What's the history of the cross, and why do we wear it as a symbol? Or some people wear it.
Yeah, some people wear it as a symbol, and I don't wear crosses as a symbol.
Yeah.
It would be like wearing an electric chair as a symbol.
So, explain more about this, because I struggle with this.
Yeah, gotcha. So you have to realize, in Christian thought, Jesus was probably one of three people, because that's what we read in the text, that he was crucified with two thieves. So we see the three crosses at the time of Jesus's crucifixion. However, crucifixion was a Roman execution that they perfected. And so you would walk around walk around the Roman Imperial Kingdom.
Right.
And you would be able to see mass crucifixions of people who would be termed as zealots or barbarians or people who just were trying to rise up against Rome. And so they would crucify hundreds of people at a time. And so they would take the bar and a crossbar and basically dig a hole in the ground and get three pieces of rope. And even when you nail someone to a cross, you can't, well, you couldn't nail right there. You had to nail into their wrist.
Yeah.
But they oftentimes, even at the wrist, the people would fall off. And so when they would fall off, they instead now began to tie so that they wouldn't fall off. So you had people who were gauging and then other things, like they would stab and beat. And so essentially that was a form of execution that the Romans just perfected, because they were used to believing themselves as a superior people. And if you did not accept Rome as a superior people, then you would be either enslaved or killed, crucified. And so anyone who tried to rise up against that, that's what would be your end. So there are images and tellings, especially in Pliny's history and Plutarch's history, of mass crucifixions. So the idea that Jesus's crucifixion was a rare event is untrue. And it was a form of social control. So one of my professors, James Cone, would argue that the cross is similar to a lynching tree. And so you had large numbers of Black men, women, and children who were lynched in the, well, between, I want to say 1910 to 1940s, 50s. And the folks who did the lynchings would have postcards of the lynching, and you would see people posing for the postcard with lynched bodies behind them, and they were in their Sunday's best.
Oh my gosh.
Because they were coming from church.
This makes me want to throw up.
But this is the history of white Western Christianity.
Yeah, I know.
And so when we talk about the history of white Western Christianity and what coming out of church and then going to a lynching means, that, again, the superiority of one body over another body, that's when, you know, some of us who say, what are evangelicals thinking today? That's what we're thinking about. We're asking that question knowing that history. But if you don't know that history, you don't know to ask that question. So if I wouldn't wear a noose around my neck, why would I wear a cross around my neck? Why would I wear an electric chair around my neck?
And it's interesting, it's around the neck.
Yeah, exactly. So no.
Yeah.
Yeah. Couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And used to. Mm-hmm. Used to, mm-hmm. but then had to, you start to learn more and you're like, yeah. oh, this is problematic.
Yeah.
And I say all that to say, we've talked a lot about Spirit of God, uh-huh. and Spirit of God resides deeply and constantly within me.
Right.
So I don't see a negation of the Spirit of God working and moving within me, even as I problematize some of the traditions that we've grown up in and say, is that a good tradition? And that's not, it's problematic for me if I didn't question it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Can you share a little bit more about your experience as a Black woman going through the scholarships that you've had got to go mm-hmm. through and this yeah. the education? Cause I know you were like the trailblazer.
I'm not the trailblazer.
But there was a point that you were, you had to make your own trail.
I had to make my own trail, but it's interesting. The more I talk to others in the field, mm-hmm. you know, Black and brown, mm-hmm. we've all share similar experiences. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating to me that you ask this question the day after, you know, 100 families are in a FBI sting, 100 families are revealed to pay for access and admission for their children to attend prestigious colleges. Mm-hmm. So the FBI sting revealed that many actors and actresses and people with wealth and influence mm-hmm. wanted their children to get into best schools, Princeton, Harvard, Yale, whatever, mm-hmm. and basically paid for them to get into these schools. Mm-hmm. And so my conversations and what I'm seeing in my own social media is a lot of us who took out loans,
right?
Didn't have grandma money, didn't mm-hmm. have legacy, mm-hmm. didn't have anything but just the drive to want to learn something.
Right.
And we hear about this thing and we're like, well, of course. But then in the midst of what we've tried to do in order to get our education, no matter what, when we enter into a classroom, we're presumed incompetent or we are presumed to have cheated our way through because of course you didn't get your PhD without somebody helping you. I'm like, no, they actually made it harder. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
So for those of us who blaze a trail, the journey often includes, especially for me in Bible.
Right.
Your people don't do Bible. You should do theology. And I say, what are you talking about, my people? And they say, oh, you know, Black people. And I say, well, what, why? You know, and these were professors that I had and been in class with. And they'd say something like, well, you know, the biblical languages are hard. You all have a hard time learning Greek and Hebrew. And I'd say, really?
Yeah.
So the steering away from certain mm-hmm. academic areas. Mm-hmm. And just even the constant testing over and over again mm-hmm. that says, you know, I don't believe that you know this language that you say you know. Mm-hmm. Read this again. Mm-hmm. Do this again. Let me see some more footnotes. Let me see some more editing. Let me see some more this. Let me see some more that. Where my colleagues mm-hmm. did not have that issue. Mm-hmm. Unbeknownst to them, though, it made me better. Mm-hmm. And that's the flip side of this, that you push and you push so much and try to push out, but your pushing actually made me better. Mm-hmm. And so there are a lot of us who get into our positions just because we are tenacious, mm-hmm. we're resilient, mm-hmm. we refuse to stop. Mm-hmm. And so I talked about those enslaved people out in the marsh.
Right.
I can't stop. Mm. Because that would be a disservice mm-hmm. to them. Mm-hmm. And I won't allow that to happen. Mm-hmm. So that actually pushes me further to say, oh no, I can do this and so much more. Mm. Yeah, I think that's it.
Yeah, and I
don't want to name names or institutions.
We don't need to go there, yeah, but I just, I think that's what I love about the culture that you guys bring. Mm-hmm. Is that Thank resilience? Mm-hmm. I wanted to have you on for the month of February because mm-hmm. that's where I had.
I know, sorry.
This is still good. This is still good. But I think just hearing other people's stories mm-hmm. that are maybe silenced of their yeah. strength, mm-hmm. It just makes me realize of what a strong legacy that you guys have already have, mm-hmm. even if you don't have that money behind you.
Right. Right.
Like you have a very strong legacy that mm-hmm. is, I admire so much of the fact that like you keep going. Mm-hmm. For the future,
yeah,
but also because of the past, what people mm-hmm. had to sacrifice
yeah.
to work for you and where you are today.
Well, that's the thing. You're not alone. You're in a right. link. You're in a chain link. You're in a right. link of people. Yeah. And so I think the element of individualism and individuality mm-hmm. oftentimes does mainstream culture a disservice mm-hmm. because you forget that you're in the link. Yeah. And you think you're doing things on your own and you're a trailblazer and you are, but you're a trailblazer in a link. Mm-hmm. And so I always have to honor the before and the after. I have to mm-hmm. honor the ancestors before me and the grandchildren that come after me. Mm-hmm. I have to. Mm-hmm. And it would just be a disservice if I did not. But then the other piece is, I want to say, don't get it twisted. Mm. Strength crumbles sometimes. Mm. And you have to, we have to, especially in African American women's bodies, mm-hmm. have to take care of ourselves to the point where we don't die. Mm. And so I was being facetious when I was saying I'm too cute to die.
Yeah.
But it's the truth mm-hmm. because I'm already seeing colleagues who are leaving this earth mm. sooner and faster. Mm-hmm. And we can't allow that to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just thinking about folks who are leaving and, oh, good Lord. I have two pictures right here. That's Katie Cannon and James Cone. Uh-huh. And they're gone. And I don't understand how they're gone. And I look at other scholars and I'm thinking, why are you still here? Mm. That's not nice either.
but I think you're touching on the importance of our health.
Yes. Yes.
How do you define health? I'm curious. Mm.
Health for me is wholeness of mind, wholeness of body, wholeness of spirit. So I'm thinking that tripart.
Yeah.
I don't sleep well when I'm thinking about problems and
right.
issues.
So right.
I have to recognize that sleep is an element of my health. And uh-huh. I've been really cognizant of trying to get enough sleep. And if there's something that I need to take care of, I take care of it before I try to go to sleep. Mm-hmm. Being able to think clearly, being able to, again, sleep plays a large part of that for me, mm-hmm. that I think better and I write better and I think clearer about the thoughts yeah. that I have if I'm sleeping well and have enough time. And I constantly tell students, good protein and water, please. Get some good protein, mm-hmm. good protein, good protein. Mm-hmm. You need good protein foods. I remember an advisor when I was doing my PhD saying, get good protein, please. Yeah. You can't think if you don't have good protein. And I was like, really? Okay. I hear you.
And good carbohydrates.
Yes. Like. I know. She doesn't always say good protein, but good carbohydrates. Get that sweet potato. Yeah. So, yes.
I think a lot of us, including myself, struggle with this concept of sleep and rest.
Mm. Well, think about it. We live in a culture that almost glorifies no sleep.
It does, yeah. mm-hmm. unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And I know from my own journey, a lot of times some of the trauma gets revisited in nightmares. Oh. And I don't know if other people struggle with that mm-hmm. too, or they bring their worries within their sleep. What does it mean to cast your worries upon him so mm-hmm. you can rest in him?
Oh, good question. And it's so fascinating because I don't think I've thought about casting my worries upon him in a long time hmm. in that way. Because why have I not thought about it in that way in a while? I think I haven't thought about it in that way in a while because I'm not connected to Black church here. Hmm. And that's been a struggle for me in this particular place.
Yeah.
Black church is farther away in the context of Seattle. It's either further, way further south or way further north. Mm-hmm. Because of gentrification mm-hmm. that pushes people of color
yep.
outside.
Yep.
So for me, and this is the ritual for me. Mm-hmm. The ritual for me has been actually laying on my face on my floor in my living room. And that laying on my floor on my face in my living room mm-hmm. is the positionality that allows me to cast my cares upon him. And I haven't used the language of cast my cares upon him mm-hmm. in those times, but that's what I've been doing.
The body gave it. You didn't have to vocalize it.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right.
Yeah. And I think for me, movement has always been some type of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
In that aspect.
Yeah.
So it's interesting that you bring that mm-hmm. up of mm-hmm. your body was saying that the words of
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been doing that for the past 4 years, ever since I've been here.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause that's almost been like ground zero
mm.
for me.
Mm.
Yeah. That position.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
What do you mean by ground zero? I think I know, but I want to explain that.
Like a reset point. Reset mm-hmm. point. Mm-hmm. That when I get up from that position, it's the water. It's mm-hmm. the water baptism.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That 0.00 on the, you know, when we were in school, we had to do the graph or the.
I know what you're talking about. This thing.
I was never good at math.
Geography?
Yeah.
I can barely say it.
I don't say those words.
I know. You speak Greek.
Right.
And Hebrew.
Yeah, that's what I do. It's funny. People ask me, well, what Bible translation do you read? I'm like, I don't read translation. I read Greek and Hebrew.
Yeah. That's too good. Well, we are plenty of time. Do you have anything else that you would like to add to the listeners? It's been a very rich conversation.
I just say thank you. I guess to the listeners, just continue to figure out what body positions are good for you, mm-hmm. what stages of making sure you're whole and healthy in all areas, and just continue to strive for those things. Yeah. That's what I would say.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for making time out of your day for this.
No problem.
Yeah. Listeners, thank you so much for joining in. If you haven't yet, make sure you subscribe so you don't miss an episode, and then share the love with the 5 stars and a comment. And that will be peacing out. I will be back next week. Hey, Strong Ones, I have some really exciting news for you guys. I am hosting the Women of Iron Strength Retreat. This is for women who love lifting heavy, who love kettlebells, and also want to learn and progress their movement skills with the pistol squat, the pull-up, and the kettlebell press. I will be hosting this with Ann Cass Stevens down at her gym, Team Muscle Bus, in Salt Lake City, June 22nd and 23rd. So we'll be mainly focusing on those three movements, really diving into those and allowing you, giving you the skills and the tips for you can progress very quickly. We will also be diving in a little bit with the strong first level 1 and level 2 movement and skills with those. This is not a strong first event. It is just a retreat hosted by 2 strong first instructors who are passionate about these 3 lifts, who want to empower women to feel comfortable and confident to be able to do a pistol squat, a pull-up, and a press. This retreat is not just getting PRs in those 3 lifts, but it's also getting PRs in life. PRs with new friendships, a new mental toughness, and a new level of emotional stamina as well. So come join us, me and Ann Cass Stevens, down at her gym, Team Muscle Bus, Salt Lake City area, June 22nd to 23rd. If you have questions about this event, let's connect. I'm on Instagram at Anna_Willard_. Hit me up in the DMs. You can find me on Facebook. Again, Anna Willard. Send me a private message. Or if you like the traditional way of connecting,
through email. My email is coachwillard10@gmail.com. If you have questions about this event, please let me know. Other than that, more information is down in the show notes. Again, this is an event for women, hosted by women, to get some PRs in lifting and some PRs in life. Other than that, strong ones, you guys have a wonderful week, and blessings on your journey.